This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Monday. Coming up, we have Brandon Weikert a half hour from now. Why is the Navy and Marines? What exactly are they planning on doing in Venezuela and why? We'll talk to him about that about a half hour from now. I'm actually going to, in a way, defend Trump on something he said today that is making a lot of people on the right angry about bringing in Chinese students, lots of them. But you know what time it is. Oh, that's political. We don't have time for that now. It's the start of the second hour on Monday. So it's Medal of Honor Monday time. Same thing. Every Monday at this time, we take a Medal of Honor citation. We read it. We remember the men. We honor them. We honor their deeds. We have to tell our children about these men and the things they did. And remember, we accept suggestions if you have ones you like, ones you're related to, ones you just enjoy, ones you whatever. It's not just love, hate, and death threats. You can send in to jesse@jessekellyshow.com. So we're going to do two tonight. This one, this guy says, Jesse, I went to Washington with my daughter on her fifth grade trip. That's so cool you got to go. I didn't get to go. I wanted to go when my kids went. Chris, you're never going to pay for it when your daughter gets old enough anyway. We stopped by the National Vietnam War Memorial and searched for a specific name, First Lieutenant Douglas B. Fournette. He was from my hometown of Lake Charles, Louisiana. Before you get to the 210 Loop Bridge, you will see a dedicated marker to this warrior. He came from a hard-nosed family. His brother Rocky was such a fierce defensive back in McNeese State that the coach made him wear a black helmet so the offense knew where he was on the field at all times. Love what you're doing. Every Monday, I take my daughter Molly to a Monday night activity, and we get to bond together listening to Medal of Honor Monday. Gosh, that's freaking cool. Love you, brother. Be well. So without further ado, born in, as you heard, in Lake Charles, Louisiana, Vietnam veteran Douglas Bernard Fournette. Let's find out what he did.
Ready, aim, fire.
Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity in action at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty, First Lieutenant Fournette, Infantry, distinguished himself in action while serving as Rifle Platoon Leader of 2nd Platoon Company B. While advancing uphill against fortified enemy positions in the Aisha Valley, the platoon encountered intense sniper fire, making movement very difficult. The right flank man suddenly discovered an enemy claymore mine covering the route of advance and shouted a warning to his comrades. Realizing that the enemy would also be alerted, First Lieutenant Fournette ordered his men to take cover and ran uphill toward the mine, drawing a sheath knife as he approached it. With complete disregard for his safety and realizing the imminent danger to members of his command, he used his body as a shield in front of the mine as he attempted to slash the control wires leading from the enemy positions to the mine. As he reached for the wire, the mine was detonated, killing him instantly. Five men nearest the mine were slightly wounded, but First Lieutenant Fournette's heroic and unselfish act spared his men of serious injury or death. His gallantry and willing self-sacrifice are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon him, himself, his unit, and the U.S. Army. And just to let you know, in case you don't, a claymore mine is a terrifying thing. They're full of ball bearings. have a little bit of experience with them. And look, when we trained with them, they were intimidating because you know what they do when they go off. You know what they do. To throw yourself in front of one that you know the enemy holds the clacker. You set them off with a clacker. The enemy holds the controls and you throw yourself in front of one is awesome, man. It's awesome. Douglas Bernard Fournette. Now, for our second one. This one also came in. It was a recommendation from a Marine, Master Sergeant, who I'm not going to read his name. I don't want to get him in trouble. Jesse, if you've not already used this Warrior for Medal of Honor Monday, please do so. PFC, and you're going to have to bear with me on the name, Kaho Ohanohano. That's just his last name. Kaho Ohanohano. I'm assuming that's Hawaiian, Samoan, something like that. My favorite Medal of Honor recipient, this guy says. So he was, oh yeah, look at that. Born 1930, accredited to Hawaii is what they think it was. So without further ado, also Army, let's do the second Medal of Honor citation for an Anthony T. Kaho Ohanohano. And I'm sorry if I screwed up the pronunciation on that. I'm stupid. I do that.
Ready, aim,
fire. Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty, Private First Class Anthony T. Kaho, Company H, 17th Infantry Regiment, 7th Infantry Division, distinguished himself by extraordinary heroism and action against the enemy in the vicinity of Chuparri, Korea, on the 1st of September, 1951. On that date, Private First Class Kaho was in charge of a machine gun squad supporting the defensive positioning of Company F when a numerically superior enemy force launched a fierce attack. Because of the enemy's overwhelming numbers, friendly troops were forced to execute a limited withdrawal. As the men fell back, Private First Class Kaho ordered his squad to take up more defensible positions and provide covering fire for the withdrawing friendly force. Although having been wounded in the shoulder during the initial enemy assault, Private First Class Kaho gathered a supply of grenades and ammunition and returned to his original position to face the enemy alone. As the hostile troops concentrated their strength against his emplacement in an effort to overrun it, Private First Class Kaho fought fiercely and courageously, delivering deadly accurate fire into the ranks of the onrushing enemy. When his ammunition was depleted, he engaged the enemy in hand-to-hand combat until he was killed. Private First Class Kaho Ohanohano's heroic stand so inspired his comrades, they launched a counterattack that completely repulsed the enemy. Upon reaching Private First Class Kaho Ohanohano's emplacement, friendly troops discovered 11 enemy soldiers lying dead in front of the emplacement and two inside it, killed in hand-to-hand combat. Private First Class Kaho Ohanohano's extraordinary heroism and selfless devotion to duty are in keeping with the finest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon himself, the 7th Infantry Division, and the United States Army. And we will play taps in honor of both of these gentlemen tonight. It's amazing how often those Korean War ones go that way. of the numerically superior enemy force overrunning the lines. I've read more Korean books than I can count, and that's just the Korean War. You take a hilltop, the Chinese, because they were mostly Chinese, would mass up more bodies than you could kill, and they would send in waves of them, and they would just overrun you. And then you'd have to counterattack and take it back. And then they would counterattack and take it back. And there were a lot of very brave men who did a lot of very brave things in Korea. Like I've told you before, it is called the Forgotten War, and it really truly is the Forgotten War. Look into Korea. Look into Korea. If this stuff interests you, fascinates you, you want to learn about, you know, the fighting they did over there, the heroes who fought their way through that place and then had to fight their way out of it, go pick up a book or watch a documentary. I think there's a good one on Amazon, if I remember right, called Chosen. It's on Amazon or Netflix, but it's called Chosen, about the Chosen Reservoir. Highly recommend it. I don't remember if it's kid-friendly or not. It could be. It could be. Chris said probably not. No, it could be. I don't remember. So kids, ask mom and dad. And get your mom and dad some Relief Factor. I'm kidding. Your parents can buy their own Relief Factor. Look, you don't have to live with pain in your life. You think you do because it's always there. Your elbow always hurts. Your foot always hurts. Your neck always hurts. And so you've just accepted that it's part of getting older. Relief Factor is here to take it away. Round-the-clock pain, it's life-draining. Some days you don't want to get out of bed, right? You don't want to go to work. You don't want to bend over. You don't want to... Let Relief Factor help you. Your body's trying to fight that inflammation. Relief Factor is 100% drug-free. It's the help your body needs to get rid of it. Over a million people have already tried it. You know how many call and order more? 70%. Almost 70%. 1-800, the number 4, Relief, or go to relieffactor.com. All right, let's talk about Trump saying he's going to allow 600,000 Chinese students in. Next.
Truth. Attitude. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Monday. We just did Medal of Honor Monday. Remember, we have Brandon Weikert coming up 10 minutes from now, going to get us educated on what exactly is happening in Venezuela. So Trump said something earlier today that has the right apoplectic and upset. And don't get me wrong, I'm upset too. But I understand. You ever have those situations in your life where you're mad, but you get it? You're mad, but you get it. He said this.
It's a very important relationship. We're going to get along good with China. I hear so many stories about we're not going to allow their students. We're going to allow their students to come in. We're going to allow, it's very important, 600,000 students. It's very important. But we're going to get along with.
We're going to allow 600,000 Chinese students into our country. Chinese spies is what they are. It's not exactly a guess. It's not an unknown thing. China sends its young people into our country, into the university system, to not just spy, steal. They are the biggest corporate thieves on the planet. They steal technology. They steal intellectual property. They take it back to China. They duplicate it. And it's really, really bad. And everyone's mad at Trump today about that. We're going to allow 600,000 in. We're going to allow 600,000 in. I'm mad too. So let me clarify. That's really bad. It's really bad. However, remember when Trump was talking with Zelensky on the first meeting where it blew up in the White House, where Zelensky lost his mind, starts freaking out. Remember what Trump told him? You don't have the cards. You don't have the cards. And Zelensky had to be like a stupid, angry little troll. I'm not playing cards. And everyone knows what Trump was saying, including Zelensky. What does he mean by that? You don't have leverage. Ukraine doesn't have any leverage. You can't militarily defeat the Russians. You're not in possession of the territory the Russians have taken. You don't have leverage. You can want it. You can scream that's wrong, but you don't have it. All right. So let's have a frank talk about where we are as a country right now. China produces 90% of the pharmaceuticals that people take in the United States of America. 90. Not 9, not 19, 90. That's a tiny, tiny example of how much we have to have cooperation with China. And so don't get me wrong, they have to have cooperation with us too. But it really comes down to this, if I have to make it extremely simple. China makes the stuff, we buy the stuff. That's the terrible relationship we are in. You can hate that, and I hate it. You can say we have to change that, and we do. But, you know, wish in one hand, grab in the other, and see which one fills up first, as my dad used to tell me all the time. You can't wish away where we currently are. We don't have all the cards. We have some cards. We have cards. There's no question about it. We have some cards. Look, I'm going to talk to Brandon Weikert next. I'm going to flat out ask him, how much of the world's rare earth minerals does China have control over versus how much we have control over? Imagine if China owns 60, 70% of the rare earth minerals, and I think it's at least that high. I'm going to confirm it with Brandon Weikert in a moment. What if it's 70%? Now, keep in mind, when we say rare earth minerals, what does that even mean? Like, everyone loves that term now. What does that even mean? We are talking about the things you have to pull out of the ground to make the modern things your country, your economy, and most definitely your military need to keep running. You want your military to be as modern as the next guy? You have to have that in the ground. What if China owns it all? And I know they own a big chunk of it. I'm not happy. I'm not happy that this is where we are. And I'm certainly not happy that we're allowing 600,000 Chinese spies into the country. I think that's suicidal and insane. I don't like it either. But I understand it. I understand we don't hold all the cards here. You know, it's not a huge story, but a little bit of a story that Canada's backing off. You know, Canada was talking really tough. We were talking about tariffs, and Canada started flexing. They have a bunch of commies up there in charge now. Poor Canadians, too. It sucks for them. Canada bends the knee to Trump's will and drops the tariffs on U.S. goods. That's from today. Why? Well, we have all the cards. If you're Canada, you don't have that leverage. If we pull the trigger on you when it comes to tariffs, you're finished. You can hurt us a little. We can smash Canada's budget. We can smash their budget. We can smash their economy into a fine powder. So they had no choice. It's all about leverage. We are not in that same situation with China. Yes, China needs us to buy a lot of stuff. There's no question they need us too. But we're in a Mexican standoff right now, okay? We can't afford to smash them, because they can smash us back. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. This was negotiated. Xi Jinping, okay, you want this, you don't want that? You're taking 600,000 spies. Students, sorry, I misspoke. Sucks. I hate it. It's the way it is. Now, you know what else friggin' sucks? Have you ever talked to somebody who had their information, their identity stolen online? Have you ever talked to someone who has had to go through that living hell? Credit score destroyed, bank accounts emptied, thieves using your information. Did you know nearly 16 million PayPal users had their credentials allegedly posted for sale online? It's flat out put it up for sale. Protect your stuff online. Your children, too, especially. They click on everything. Let LifeLock protect you. And the best thing about LifeLock, not only do they alert you when they notice threats, hey, this popped up on the dark web, they restore you if the worst happens. They restore you, and they actually mean it. Not one of these ripoff companies. Ah, sorry, you didn't read the fine print. I know these people personally. They will make you whole again. You want to save up to 40%. On your first year, LifeLock.com, promo code Jesse. Or you can call them 1-800-LIFELOCK. promo code Jesse. LifeLock.com, promo code Jesse. Terms apply. We'll be back with Brandon Weikert.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Monday. The work week is just beginning. I can tell how happy Chris is about it. Anyway, I'm happy because Brandon Weikert's about to educate us on some things, as he often does. Joining me now, wonderful author, national security man, Brandon Weikert. Hey, Brandon, why is the Navy going down to Venezuela?
Well, thanks for having me, as always. The Navy has decided to flex some muscles in the face of Nicolas Maduro. Ostensibly, it's to help the Trump administration conduct its anti-drug cartel operations, but I suspect that it is much more than that. I believe that the Trump administration is attempting to conduct some form of regime change in Caracas by ousting Nicolas Maduro.
Oh, well, that always goes well. Okay, let's rewind quite a bit, because I realize everybody comes at the news from different levels of understanding. Venezuela, how did they get to where they got now? Maduro, what's the deal with them? Pretend like I don't know squat. What's going on there?
Well, 40 years ago, Venezuela was one of the wealthiest countries in the world. It is one of the great oil producers. And then in the 90s and early 2000s, they went through a political revolution led by Hugo Chavez, who was a colonel in the Venezuelan army. He was a socialist, and he overthrew the government and installed a radical socialist regime with himself as the leader. And ever since the 2000s, it has been run by either Hugo Chavez, who died in 2013, and then after that, it was his right-hand man, Nicolas Maduro, who took over. They have funded drug cartel operations. They're a narco-terrorist regime. They have funded human trafficking. They have sent Tren de Aragua, which is a paramilitary force, into the United States through our broken border. And there may or may not be some evidence that their company, run by Venezuelan national Smartmatic, may be involved in the Philippines and other countries in manipulating the votes. It's an election counting machine software. And in fact, the CEO is currently indicted, I believe, in a Miami court. So there's a lot of problems with Venezuela we've had going back several decades. Every president has talked about how much of a problem it is, but because it's an oil producer, we are in a bind. We need to have business relations with Venezuela, but the regime as it stands hates the United States.
Okay, so we are currently purchasing oil from Venezuela?
So there was a special carve-out that was allowed after Chavez took over. The only U.S. company that was allowed to directly drill for oil consistently in Venezuela was Chevron. This became a fight about 3 or 4 months ago in the Trump administration. You had people like Rick Grenell, you had people like him versus Marco Rubio. Rick Grenell was saying, hey, President Trump, renew the licenses. It's easy, quick access to oil. All we have to do is pay the Venezuelans off, and they'll look the other way while we mine for it or drill for it. And Marco Rubio was saying, hey, that money is directly feeding these organizations in Venezuela that are sending drugs, human traffickers, illicit arms, Tren de Aragua into the United States through our broken southwestern border. We got to cut them off. So there was a temporary cutoff about 2 months ago. It was a big fight. Trump sided with Rubio, and many people, myself included, believe this was part of a larger move to slowly build up a regime change operation. Don't forget also, Venezuela's regime has allowed the Chinese, the Russians, and even Iran into our hemisphere for the last 20 years. And also Venezuela, if you deal with Venezuela, you take care of that regime, then Trump has a clearer shot at taking the Panama Canal Zone, which is something that he has wanted to do. Venezuela is a complicating factor in that mission as it's currently run. So that's the logic. Now, I don't know if that's what we should be doing, but that is the logic behind, I think, what Trump is doing.
Okay. Yeah, actually, we'll get to the Panama Canal thing in a few moments. Can you elaborate more on Venezuela and being a narco-terrorist state? Because they're never brought up when it comes to cartels. People obviously know about Colombia, and they dang sure know about Mexico. What's Venezuela's vested interest in the Yayo?
So Venezuela has a state-owned cartel. Members of the Venezuelan parliament, the current head of the Venezuelan parliament, the vice president, probably Maduro himself, several key Venezuelan generals and intelligence leaders of the Venezuelan intelligence operation, they all run, Cartel of the Suns. It's one of the largest cartels in the world, and it is completely state-owned and backed. So it is a state-owned cartel. This is very different from Colombian cartels. It's even different from how Mexico's cartels operate. In Venezuela, the regime and the cartel is one. And then, of course, there's also Tren de Aragua, which, as I said, it's described as a prison gang in Venezuela that has these sort of transnational ties. In fact, Tren de Aragua is a paramilitary force. I live in Florida. I deal a lot with Venezuelan expats. All of them tell me TDA, Tren de Aragua, is a paramilitary force that Maduro deploys to go after things like Venezuelan political dissidents in America. So that's what Venezuela is doing. And a lot of the Cartel of the Suns actually does business and supports the Colombian cartels. They do business and help out with certain Mexican cartels, all as part of this feeder program to get their product and the human traffic up into the broken southwestern border with the United States.
Okay, now you mentioned China, you mentioned Russia. In what way do they invite them into our hemisphere?
Well, the Russians, through the Wagner Group, which is their big supposedly private military contracting group, it's actually an arm of the Russian government, though, and the Russian military staffs it and Russian intelligence supports it. They have massive contracts with Caracas. They provide a lot of the protection for Venezuela's leaders. I suspect they provide protection and conduct operations on behalf of both the Venezuelan government and the Cartel of the Suns. The Russians are allowed to base nuclear-capable Blackjack bombers in Venezuela. They have repeatedly landed them there over the last decade. They're in fact talking about sending these Shahed 136 Iranian-made drones that the Russians use in Ukraine. The Russians are talking about sending them over to Venezuela to fight the Americans. The Chinese, they have these massive contracts for access to Venezuela's oil and rare earth minerals. And obviously they like to destabilize America's leading role in the Western Hemisphere. It's also part of China's control of the Panama Canal, as well as their major presence in the Caribbean Sea, which is basically now a Chinese lake. And so Venezuela is in the middle of all, is the epicenter of all of this, inviting the American enemies into our hemisphere to undermine us, that regime is.
Brandon, do you have, I didn't even get to the friggin' Panama Canal or Venezuela's military capability or anything. Do you have time for one more segment with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, we are going to come right back with Brandon Weicker schooling us on Venezuela. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Monday. It's been a Medal of Honor Monday. Maybe you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. We still have Brandon Weicker educating us on some things when it comes to Venezuela. Apparently, the Navy is heading down there. The Marines are heading down there. Before we get to what's heading down there, how are they militarily? At some point in time, as you said, they were one of the wealthiest countries in the world. What kind of military are we dealing with here?
Well, it's pretty much a, conventional force-wise, it's not that impressive. I would argue even the Houthi rebels of Yemen are probably more impressive with their anti-access area denial capabilities. The Venezuelans are late to the party in terms of building up their own A2 AD capacity. The Russians, like I said, are helping them do that. But again, it's late in the game. They do have these Maoist-like militias that are, you know, the Bolivarian, the, you know, militias, which are like the people's militias. And Maduro is claiming he's mobilizing 4.5 million of these militiamen to fight Los Gringos. I'm very skeptical that he can mobilize that many. And even if he can, you know, this kind of reminds me of the Fedayeen in Iraq. They really weren't that impressive at the end of the day. Obviously, Iraq itself was a disaster, but actually knocking out Saddam was pretty straightforward. I think the same thing is true of Maduro. I would just posit, if the Trump administration is playing its cards right, it needs to remember it's not dealing with a jihadi-type leadership that wants to go meet their maker by fighting to the death. They're dealing with basically a narco-criminal gang that just wants the biggest slice of the pie they can get. If the Trump administration flexes its muscle with these military maneuvers off of Venezuela's coast and signals to some element of Maduro's government, we will leave you in place as long as you hand over Maduro and let us get the oil, I think that's a deal that some ambitious person or group working under Maduro might go for, and it could be relatively bloodless because, you know, it is a jungle war, even though I don't think they're militarily on par with even, say, the Houthis in certain ways. A jungle ground war could get very dicey, especially because, I mean, numbers matter. 4.5 million guys, if they can get anywhere near that, that's going to be a problem for us. But I think there's a way we might be able to do this relatively bloodlessly. I just hope the Trump administration is, you know, reaching out to certain people in the regime who might be willing to part ways with Maduro in exchange for remaining in power.
Yeah, jungle warfare freaking sucks. Okay. All right, let's go to the Panama Canal because you brought that up. And I know Trump's been hot on that for a while. What do we have now as far as that situation goes, and what do we want?
Well, what we have now is basically the Chinese manage it. They have the two largest ports, one on the mouth of the Pacific side, one on the mouth of the Atlantic side, and then they're building these. You know, my friend Michael Yan, who's an independent war reporter, he's been in Panama on and off for the last 2 years. He's actually taken pictures and posted them on a Substack of these bridges the Chinese are building across the Panama Canal. So the Chinese own major infrastructure. They have a huge footprint in the Panama Canal zone. Now, in peacetime, it seems relatively, insignificant because ships are still going through and whatnot. But with the Chinese managing the two sides of the Panama Canal and the locks of the Panama Canal, the Chinese could easily sabotage them in the event that a war between the United States and China broke out. And that could seriously cripple our ability to move naval forces and other assets from one side of the Americas, you know, the Atlantic side to the Pacific side and vice versa, which would complicate our ability to deploy forces, say, to help protect Taiwan from a possible Chinese invasion.
So how do we handle that? We're not going to go down and bomb Chinese ports. How do we handle that?
So this was what Trump was talking about. He tried to leverage the trade war with China to get them to basically sell off the two properties, the big properties they have to BlackRock. Setting, you know, aside my distaste for BlackRock, it didn't go anywhere because ultimately China has figured out that they have 90% of the world's rare earth mineral supply under their control. And all they have to do is whisper to Trump that we're going to cut you off like they did in April, and Trump will give them whatever they want, which is one of the reasons why he's dropped his calls to reclaim the Panama Canal Zone. Now, I don't think he's abandoned this mission. I think he's actually finding ways to basically completely surround the Panama Canal Zone and then choke it off from Chinese control. One of those ways would possibly be by taking Venezuela. He's possibly has Colombians now on his side, and we could basically create a sort of encirclement of those two Chinese ports in Panama and maybe squeeze them and if necessary take them. But I mean, we'll see. This is very dicey. And as long as China has those rare earth minerals under their belt, we're not going to do much to them.
Okay. Finally, last question before I let you go. What exactly do we have around Venezuela right now as far as our military goes? What do we have? What are we sending?
Okay, so the Iwo Jima Amphibious Assault Group, which is Marines, I believe they're underway. They'll be there shortly. I think elements of that assault group are already there. That's about 4,500 Marines and sailors. You've got three Arleigh-class Burke destroyer, class destroyers. They've got 96 vertical launch system cells that can pop off Tomahawk cruise missiles each. Then I suspect, I might get, you know, this is a theory, I suspect that we probably have a Virginia-class nuclear-powered attack submarine operating off the coast. That brings additional Tomahawk land attack cruise missile capability and probably the ability to launch special forces elements from that submarine. So we've got a small flotilla there, and that's to say nothing of what the Trump administration is talking about doing with the Mexican drug cartels. So we are rapidly ramping up our force presence in our hemisphere for the first time in decades.
How about that? He is Brandon Weikert. I told you to go buy his books. You'll get a whole lot smarter. Brandon, thank you, my brother, as always. Very much appreciate it. Chris, do you know how badly I want to scuba dive from a submarine? What, Chris? Why are you, what? Are you worried about the sonar? Why? I don't know him. Now, Chris, why would I be worried about the sonar? It's deafening. I'll wear earplugs, Chris. It's not a big deal. I want to scuba dive from a submarine so badly, and I don't know why. I don't even want to be in a submarine because I get kind of claustrophobic if my shoulders are touching the walls. And those submarines are made for little bitty midgets. You know, they're just not made for somebody like me. But I would do it if I could scuba dive from it. It would be sweet. Now, I've seen enough Navy SEAL movies. I think I could do it. What, Chris? They even have the little things where, but I don't know what they call them, but the little things that have the propeller where it basically swims for you. I don't have to keep up with the SEALs. I'll just get an extra one of those. I can do it. Anyway, have you switched your cell phone service? You know how easy it is to switch to Pure Talk. I just want to stress how easy it is to switch to Pure Talk. When you think about switching your cell phone over, it sounds like a pain, doesn't it? Because whatever you do, you have to go into the store, and then you're dealing with some brain-dead employee, and it takes 10 hours, and it's a nightmare. Pure Talk, you just pick up the phone. You dial #250, and you say Jesse Kelly. You will immediately be speaking to a pleasant person who speaks English, and they handle it all on the phone, and then they just mail you whatever you need. It's 10 minutes. And you are switched. You keep your phone number. If you want a new phone, get it. I just got a new phone from them. You want to keep your phone? Keep your phone. Pure Talk babies you into it. Dial #250 and switch to the cell phone company that actually loves America. And you'll pay way less. I pay half of what I used to pay. #250, say Jesse Kelly. We got another hour. Hang on.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.